thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Dang.
Here's John Williams.
Here, you thought somebody winning $1.5 billion would be the big news story of the day, but it's not. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago, the John Williams Show, weekdays from 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon on social media. WGN King John. Kim Gordon's in the WGN radio newsroom. Steve Bertrand's in there, too, along with a whole bunch of other names and voices that you know. We understand the president will be speaking at some point this afternoon, maybe any minute. Kim, Steve, do you have a line on that? And I presume we'll listen in on the president when he speaks. I don't mean this in a disparaging way. I really don't. But I don't think what the president is about to say is all that important, except he'll offer comfort to the country and resolve that we'll get to the bottom of this, but that's about all you can say right now.
Well, correct, but he's not handled some of these well in the past.
And I know. Been
so it's, I think it's important for the White House to come out and be forceful right away and get the message out there.
I know, and so there's this sort of, well, will there be a train wreck speech by the president right now, because he's not delicate with words, and his prepared remarks don't always go the way he or his people want. So that's, I think, the curiosity about this is not, what's he going to say? But is he going to say something wrong? And I hate that about these moments. But I think it's our obligation to carry what the president says as well.
That's your opinion. But we would carry this regardless of the history. When you have something like, well, it seems to be a concerted attack against, you know,
this is an act of terror against,
right,
CNN,
I mean,
and major American politicians.
I would carry this regardless
as
of whether he had a history or not.
As would I. I'm just bearing my soul to you, and that's kind of where my head and my heart are on this right now. I think the big questions for me anyway, maybe for you too, are who and how many people were behind this. At some point, it's their motivation. At some point, what was the device, and were these things live? They say the one that went to CNN was, in fact, a quote-unquote live device. I presume that means it could have indeed exploded. I don't know about the nature of the other ones. In one of them, white powder was discovered. And they're finding these quite literally all across the eastern part of the United States.
Well, and to the west, to Florida, and I think in California as well, there was one. There was one to the, Kim just told me, I'm catching up on it as well, but one sent to Congress in the name of Maxine Waters.
I didn't hear that.
So, you know, there's a pretty, this is a pretty clear target. This has been, this is a list of people who have been targeted by the Republicans, by the president.
I know that, and that's the other thing. So, you know, logically, the conversation at some point goes there, but I'm not ready to do that. Even as I say it, I guess I'm doing it. But I understand the temptation to say, well, then is this on the president and his angry words calling the press the enemy of the people and his very aggressive way of campaigning ever since he's been elected against any Democrat of any stripe? So I get that. But at the end of the day, things like this are the responsibility of the people that do them. And other people can exacerbate a situation, but ultimately the responsibility for acts like this fall on the person that's packing a bomb and sending it. Okay, the president's going to talk here at some point. So, Steve, not to belabor this point, but can you give me a heads up on the logistics on this?
As my understanding, there's an event scheduled. I think it's on opioid addiction, and we expect him to maybe make comments at the beginning. So I'm sorry, I don't know exactly when it will be.
For sure. Okay. Well, you and Elif, I know, are following this, so we'll bring the president's remarks up and on the air for you here on WGN Radio. And, Steve, I'm with you completely on this, too. Regardless of who the president was or how anybody has been behaving or campaigning, no, the president's words bear hearing today, and you will absolutely hear them here on WGN Radio, that's for sure. Two explosive devices were found in the mail sent to former President Barack Obama and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Some of these devices sent to the homes of the individuals. George Soros is a case in point, but nothing to our knowledge has been sent to Barack Obama's home here in the Chicago area. The devices were similar to one found Monday at the billionaire philanthropist Soros, and federal authorities are investigating whether they were linked. A statement, the Secret Service said it has intercepted suspicious packages addressed to Secret Service protectees, Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Obama. The device addressed to Mrs. Clinton in Westchester County was found late on Tuesday by a Secret Service employee who screens mail for her. The package addressed to Mr. Obama was intercepted by Secret Service personnel in Washington, D.C., early today, Wednesday. The packages were immediately identified during routine mail screening procedures as potentially explosive and were appropriately handled as such. According to Secret Service, the protectees did not receive the packages, nor were they at risk of receiving them. Hats off to the people that do the dangerous work that we ask these people to do, particularly in these incendiary times. That's a statement by me. The statement said the agency had initiated a full-scope criminal investigation that will leverage all available federal, state, and local resources to determine the sources of the package and identify those responsible. That's kind of where we are, and I haven't read all of the names of the people who have received suspicious or explosive packages today. I literally don't have it in front of me, but I know it's been growing by the minute. It's 1:14 on WGN. In the 2 o'clock hour, we visit with a neurologist from Northwestern Medicine who's going to swing by here and talk to us a little bit about what Sandra Day O'Connor has been going through and continues to deal with. Every time somebody who's high profile and it is announced that they have dementia or early onset Alzheimer's, we all take a breath, don't we? Pause and hope that's not you or me or somebody that we know down the road. And too many of us over the age of 27 have these sort of lingering suspicions, these little nagging feelings that when you can't recall a name, when you find your memory not as sharp as it once was, you wonder, is this a sign of something down the road? And those are the sorts of questions I have for the doctor. And I talked to him about this off the air today. And you've probably heard the answers to this. Your inability to recall names, dates, and places as you get older is quite normal. But there are some things that are flags for the early onset of Alzheimer's. And one of them is the loss of short-term memory, which, again, sort of offers me no consolation because I have terrible short-term, mid-term, and long-term memory. I can't remember anything. My only consolation is that I've never been able to. Fortunately, I don't hold a position of, I don't know, public exposure. It's not like anybody's going to notice that I don't know things.
What?
That's the hell of it. It's like a lot of you are nodding going, oh, John, we wrote you off a long time ago. Don't worry, hon, you've got it. Or whatever it is you've got, it ain't good. So $1.6 billion goes to some people in South Carolina, is it? The funny thing is, the Farrah Fawcett of this is, and that's an expression I just made up, that the Powerball is it's $600 million for Friday, isn't it? Or Saturday? That's at $600 million. We would be all over that if it wasn't that the $1.6 billion just came and went.
Seems like chump change now.
It's the Farrah Fawcett effect.
Nothing compares.
I know what you're thinking. Hey, John, what's the Farrah Fawcett effect? But didn't Farrah Fawcett die at the same time that Michael Jackson did? There was somebody else whose death or major news story coincided with Farrah Fawcett's passing. And so for a minute, it was
a big deal.
If
you're going to create a phrase, you really should come to the table with more information.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, watch this. Elif,
I think you're right.
Look up who else died when Farrah Fawcett died and then how that story got buried. She's no Michael Jackson, but she would have been a story of some conversation for, I don't know, 24, 36 hours. She was there for about 10 minutes. Kim, you're on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. What did you want to say? Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, John. Could you keep your political opinion out of stories like today, especially insinuating you're blaming Trump? I mean, when you've got Maxine Waters and everybody inciting riots and danger and beating people up, really? Where do you think this is coming from?
Yeah, I don't know that I inserted my public or private or personal or political opinion into this conversation.
I thought I was trying
not to insert it in there. I didn't do a very good job of that, huh?
So should we pretend that each of these people targeted has not been
also targeted by the president with his words?
With his words? What is he saying? Is he saying to beat people up in restaurants and take people down?
That's why I hope you heard me say, Kim, that at the end of the day, the individual is the person responsible for these actions, not Maxine Waters, not Eric Holder. I'm sticking up for the president here. I'm saying that the president is not responsible for this. The individual or individuals that do this are responsible for this. You and I agree on that, right?
What you said was, you insinuated it was because of what Trump says, and then you criticized how his speech would be received before he even made it.
Yeah.
The point is, I'm so tired of your left-wing insinuations that you kind of bury into things, and this is where we are, unfortunately, when you got Democrats out there beating people up and running people out of restaurants and everything else because they can't deal and they can't accept the election. Hello, has anybody told you that the economy is booming? I'm just driving back from Pennsylvania, and I can tell you there is a now hiring sign at almost every business. There's booming construction. We didn't have this during the Democratic side.
I appreciate your phone call. I know we're in different places on this. Steve, the president is about to speak. Is that right?
Well, the president is in the room, but again, this is on a different topic. So why don't you just let me monitor it, and once he starts addressing the issue, I'll let you know.
I'm looking at a screen right now. The first lady is speaking. The president will get his turn. We don't normally bump out of the 1:30 news, as they say, with music, but we are today. Why are we doing this, Producer Elif?
This is my dream come true right here, playing a Britney Spears song on the radio show.
Yeah, mine too. So why are we doing it?
Because it's the 20th anniversary of this song. This was her breakout hit.
All right, let me hear it a little bit.
There you go, and now you're out of sight. Show me how you want it to be.
When did this, 20 years ago, so this would have been 1997? 98. Really? This was the song that we first learned that we love Britney Spears, that she was a megastar? This was her breakout hit?
Mm-hmm. Don't you remember on MTV watching it for the first time?
No.
With Griffin and Grant?
Yeah, MTV was 20 years ago away. A lot of us were still discovering music, but now we just discover crazy people on MTV. This is a fine song. I've kind of come full circle on Britney Spears. At first I thought, okay, she's a big deal. And then you thought she's kind of Looney Tunes and you dismissed her. But then I got back on the Britney Spears, leave Britney alone bus. And she's like very successful these days.
Yeah, she's got a show in Vegas.
She picked herself right back up.
Kind of.
Well, a lot of other people might have helped. But
right.
I just remember Britney like I do growing up. I don't think about new Britney at all. Like, to me, she's still this Britney.
Oh, yeah, right. You kind of forgot that middle part, huh?
Yeah. And Britney Spears is was my first CD. The one with the pink background where she's looking up. Got it from Coconut Records.
Oh, that's funny.
Right on Diversity.
Well, that's a rabbit hole. All right, we've heard enough of Britney. God bless her, but thank you.
She was 8 years younger than us when she came out with this record, by the way.
Yeah.
Mind you, Violetta.
Meaning what? Elif, what
or, do you say? She was nine
meaning,
years. Sorry.
Meaning they've wasted their lives.
Yeah, meaning we're nothing.
But you know, it's just funny because Violetta dated herself in a youthful way. She said, this was my first CD.
First CD ever.
Because
you
was
didn't, my favorite.
Because you didn't have a first album.
It was my first CD. I had a Walkman. I used to rollerblade around the block listening to Britney Spears.
So what's changed?
Not much. But rollerblading is much harder now when you faceplant.
My dad didn't let me buy the CD.
It was
I had to get the tape, actually.
Too sexy
tape.
Or something?
No. My dad still doesn't care about any of that stuff, but he didn't let me buy the CD for some reason. I had to buy the cassette tape. Every time I wanted to replay a song,
rewind.
Yeah. Frustrating.
My first album was, I don't even remember my first CD, right? Because when you were buying, if you're in your 50s, you are...
Your first CD was Britney Spears too, just
yeah,
admit it.
Exactly.
Busted. You know, you're replacing music, so it's not that memorable. I think the first album that I got to have that I paid for with my own money might have been Chicago's Greatest Hits.
That's nice.
Yeah, whatever.
When you had a CD, it was so fun to take out the little CD cover. They always had other pictures inside, and you can follow along with the...
What? Go ahead, Steve.
Well, no, that's what... That CDs actually lost that from albums.
Exactly.
Because the album cover design and the record jacket was where you would get all that, the lyrics inside.
But that was just one paper. This was like you can unfold it.
Yeah,
into
it was
six.
One or two big papers, and what you had was like a cigarette rolling paper folded around plastic.
Sometimes they'd have whole posters in there that you'd unfold.
I mean, yeah.
There's a lot more real estate inside an album sleeve than there is in a CD sleeve.
Mm.
Now, for art and for memorabilia, albums will always win.
The liner notes.
Oh, I'm not saying for art. I'm saying it was fun as a kid. And do you guys remember when you open a CD, there's those four
little... We're not going to talk her out of it. Go ahead.
Four little nuggets that the CD cover goes into.
Yeah.
It was fun to get it perfectly into all four. You just kept taking it in and out.
And hoping that you didn't break them or snap them off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you remember your CDs fondly. I remember
just
my
that
albums
one. I don't
fondly.
Even think I even got another CD.
Did you say what your first album was?
Mine was Chicago's Greatest Hits.
That was your first album?
Hmm.
Really?
Well, how about you?
I'd rather...
Beethoven, the original?
No, it might have been the Partridge Family.
I am covering myself a little bit here because mine could have been a Carpenters or a Carole King.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Greatest Chicago's Greatest Hits.
Well, I didn't even really know what that meant, so I just let him have it.
Thank
First
you.
Of all, that was really late. You would have been. That means you wouldn't have purchased your first album until you were...
In high school.
Yeah.
Well, that's possible. I mean, because then you had to get a Pioneer amp, you had to get speakers, you had to get a turntable, you need a lot of equipment that your sister wasn't going to let you have, so you had to get your own stuff. That took a lot of Christmases. And then you built up this hardware, and then you had... Now where are you going to find $6 to buy an album? So then you get your $6, and then you go out and get your album. Well, by that time, I'm a junior. Sophomore. Something like that.
Okay. I mean, by sophomore, we were buying Pretenders albums. And
listen, I had Barry Manilow albums while you guys were buying Rush.
Did you guys make mixtapes for your girlfriends?
We did make mixtapes. I didn't make any for my girlfriends, but I made them for me.
We used to record concerts off the radio.
Really?
Yeah.
That was the thing.
Well, we used to burn music off the internet.
No, that's different. You'd sit there with the pause button so you could pause it at the end of the applause, but before the announcer came back on in the commercial.
To pretend it wasn't a recording?
Well, just to cut out the stuff you don't want to hear. But you know, the... Boy, that I think we can all remember this, just as we sort of do a fast forward through the evolution of access to music. So then it was Kazaa, and what was it, Napster? What was the other website where you'd get music and download
LimeWire.
And you do it illegally.
Nexium.
There was one before LimeWire, because LimeWire was the prettier new one, almost like Apple products, where it's like white and green, nice logo.
But we were doing it illegally. That's the thing. I mean, and so then there was this, a lot of us in our houses had conversations with ourselves, our gods, and our children. And we would say, okay, I don't want you guys downloading that music illegally. I don't want that on my computer.
Well, you said it, but I don't think you really meant it.
Oh, no. I remember the conversations. We talked about this a lot back in the
day.
That
was a deal.
His kids recorded it anyway.
Well, I don't remember that.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Is that how I told the story?
No, you didn't tell the story, but you were talking about whether or not it was a moral thing or a right thing or a legal thing.
Hmm.
I'm sure your boys were recording it.
Well, it was 99 cents
the age.
A song. It was always affordable to do it that way, but it was always tempting, because all of the sudden... You could get 1,000 songs for nothing, more than you need.
I still have my very first iPod with all those songs. I have 15,000 songs, which now I would never have that many.
So
that's a lot of dollars.
And it was always illegal. And there was always the threat that some federal agency, I don't know which one it was, would find you and would prosecute you.
The Federal Music Agency.
And the Federal Music Agency... With, people with tinfoil hats and radars on their vans, did prosecute a woman in Minnesota.
Well, there was a great fear that they were coming.
And she was fined tens of millions of dollars. And she didn't have, she had 400 or 500 songs like everybody else did.
And so the idea was that she would be used as an example, right?
Yes.
And every teenager around the country...
It got our attention.
It got yours as a dad.
Yeah. So I think that this is a very fascinating conversation because as a kid growing up, we were not nervous at all about that. It was not a threat. I never even heard someone telling me not to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't know that was illegal?
I knew it was illegal, but it was one of those things
I know. Speeding, like everybody does it.
Well, yeah, but not speeding. That's not a good one.
Well, you're taking something
like
of value.
Throwing your gum out.
Throwing your gum out?
You know, like, you're not supposed to do that. But...
I'll tell you what, of the three crimes, stealing music via Napster, speeding, or throwing your gum onto the sidewalk, the greatest of them is spitting your gum out onto the
right,
sidewalk.
Which does the most public harm? It's
you should go to jail
in the gum.
For that.
Someone told me once a bird or a squirrel would choke on my gum.
A shoe will choke on your gum. Don't put your gum on the sidewalk.
I put it in the street, not on the sidewalk.
Fine.
So it's interesting that you guys were nervous about it, but I do remember the crackdown from LimeWire when all the kids knew that, listen, this is going away soon. Download as much as possible.
Yeah.
So we downloaded as much as possible and burned as many CDs as possible.
Yeah.
And then also plugged in as many iPods because you could only plug in your iPod to three separate computers.
Right.
So you covered your tracks on, you know, getting songs from your friends that you didn't have and your friends getting it from you that.
But it was like a candy high or crack or something. You just did it because
totally.
You could.
Well, because there was a time when you wanted to physically or say digitally own the music. And now you don't feel the need to own the music. You stream, you program your music, but you don't feel the need to have an album or a CD or even possess a digital file. Am I right about that?
It's the subscription economy.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's
like I pay $9 a month and I get all the music I want and I just program it every night.
It's also the millennial mentality to a certain point. We don't want
the
actual
stuff.
Physical stuff.
Yeah. The other thing about that is that the way that worked was sharing. Remember, you would host that music, and when you were getting music, you were getting it from other people's computers. So your computer would deliver music, and it would also receive music. Imagine everybody volunteering now to share their hard drive with other people, because that's how it worked. And I don't think anybody's like volunteering for something like that. Now you just bite the bullet, pay 99 cents, and buy a song.
Yeah.
Or just click on Spotify. That's what we use at our house. Type in jazz and then listen to that. Or whoever.
Do people buy 99 cent songs anymore?
Boy, I don't
know. My sister buys albums. Like if iTunes, if there's a new singer that has a new album out, she'll buy the whole album.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you go back, you listen one song at a time. You're like, whatever. I'm at the sixth song already. I should just buy the album. Which
is
cheaper.
I was at Starbucks yesterday and couple times I've been to this Starbucks, they have such great music playing in there. Really cool versions of, what was it? It was a Simon and Garfunkel song. It wasn't Bridge Over Troubled Water, but it was something like that. It was a song that you know, but it was somebody else covering it. And they were just fantastic. And so I went up to the barista. I said, "Who is this?" And they look at you like, "Well, we don't know because..." He said, "I don't know. We're not playing that. It's a service. It's like Spotify." I said, "Would you mind checking?" So then he goes back and looks to see what station they were streaming for the coffee
shop.
Was
this Starbucks?
Did you
say, "Son, back in the day, Starbucks used to sell CDs. You would create your own mix, and then we'd buy the Starbucks Christmas CD."
You know why they don't do that anymore? They still do, I think, sell some CDs there. But it used to be a real source for music. But now, automobiles do not come with CD players. Let me just say this as a cautionary tale. Having recently purchased a $23,000 non-CD player, when you buy your car, ask, "Hey, does this have a CD player?" And if it does not, don't buy that car because you're going to wish you had a CD player in that automobile.
I still remember my parents' first car where they had that in the trunk, the six different CDs you could change. And we're
I'd like stop at stoplight and say, "Hey, you want to see my trunk?"
And my parents were like, "Okay, all right, go change the CDs. You know, you got six CDs in there." It's like so ridiculous. Why would anyone need that?
You'd have like a 10, it'd be like a magazine would pop out of your CD.
Exactly.
Like a gun
exactly.
to bullet magazine.
Now, no CD player at all.
I know. It all goes so quickly. And I apologize for this trip down memory lane. We didn't intend to do this. It's just so tempting. But
I did because I love Britney Spears and, you know,
I
know this is your fault. You got us going on this. The Britney Spears song has led to this observation. My buddy Greg Batten in Peoria was always one step ahead of me in terms of automobiles and technology and stuff. And he said, "John, I've got a new car, a new used car, whatever it was. It has a CD player." Actually, I think he got the CD player put into his car aftermarket. And I said, "How will that work? If you hit a bump, you're screwed." He goes, the amazing thing is, if you hit a bump and you're playing the CD, it doesn't skip or anything. It keeps playing. It's like it didn't happen. I was amazed at this technology and had to hear more. And so we got in his car and drove around, and son of a gun, the music would come on. He'd say, watch this, hit a pothole. The music kept playing. Britney Spears or whatever it was in his car. It's 150. I think we promoed the fact that I just wanted to explain to you one complaint that I have about a very popular TV show, and we'll get to that after this break. Also, we spent the first half hour of the show talking about and are continuing to follow, though you wouldn't know it over the last 9 minutes here, the suspicious devices that have been sent to CNN, the Clintons, the Obamas, Representative Waters, George Soros, Maxine Waters, I think, was some of the people whose names have popped up. Debbie Wasserman, for instance, Smith.
I don't think she was sent one directly.
Right.
She had some like of a return
names
address.
Are the return address. So they send something, a device, explosive envelope or something to the Obamas or Clintons, and the return address in the other corner, it has Wasserman Smith or something like that.
I don't know if you mentioned Eric Holder.
I did not mention Eric Holder. That was the name, yes, that I read earlier, Steve, and thought, wow, he's on the list now, too. So these are the names that are all popping up. Who? How many? What's the motive? None of that is known yet. The president came on a short while ago, and you heard here on WGN Radio said this is important. Everybody agrees on that, and we're using the full force of the government to find out what happened.
But Secret Service and others are saying that these were functional devices, but it's interesting that not a single one has gone off. So I don't know what that, you know, if they were never intended to go off and only to scare, or if whoever did it was, you know, especially bad at it, or maybe it's especially difficult to do. But with all of these sent, it seems as if not a single one has gone off.
And you almost wonder, you're right, Steve. I mean, I guess an explosion would be much more message sending, would be much more catastrophic. But obviously a message has been delivered either way. Megan Groen is from the Taste of Hope on a phone line. I said your name wrong. How do you pronounce your last name, Megan?
Hi, it's Megan Gowan.
Gowan. Hi, Megan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to put you on for just a minute or so here, but Taste of Hope Chicago features delicious samples from Chicago's favorite chefs and mixologists. And there's a silent auction, a raffle, open bar, wine pool, and more. You pay some money, you go to this really fun event at a really fun event site, Morgan Manufacturing in Chicago. And it's to raise money for your organization. Is that right?
Yes, it is to raise funds for the American Cancer Society's mission to save lives, celebrate lives, and lead the fight for a world without cancer.
What a good cause. I mean, how can you not get behind it? But then, never mind that for a minute. This is a really fun event, isn't it?
Oh, it's so fun. We've already sold over 750 tickets. We
wow.
have some phenomenal restaurants, Sunda, Summerhouse Santa Monica, Gibson's Italia. I mean, I can go on and on with some of the amazing tastings our guests will be able to experience.
Chopping Block, Gibson's Italia, you mentioned, Lost Larson, Imperial Lamian, Stan's Donuts and Coffee, because you want some dessert in there as well.
Oh, yeah, they're bringing an 8-foot donut wall.
So I pay a fee, and then I get all the booze, all the beer and wine, and all the great food and dessert that I want, huh?
Yeah, too good to be true, right?
All right, so if I want to do this and help you guys out as well, and Morgan Manufacturing, I've been there before, that's a terrific location, isn't it?
Oh, it's phenomenal. A beautiful, beautiful loft space in the West Loop,
yeah.
And it's a perfect ambiance for this event.
Yeah. Thursday, November 8th, from 6 to 9 p.m., they do a party afterwards at 9 o'clock. Get your tickets at ChicagoTasteOfHope.org, ChicagoTasteOfHope.org. We'll visit again, Megan, but I just wanted people to know about it now and get their tickets early, okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
Good luck. Thanks for your time.
Bye now.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Markets.
Here's John Williams.
Are like that, you know. They can panic, too. It's 2:09. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago, until 3. And Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis stroll into Studio A. Remember, we're on Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon and on social media. It's WGN King John. want to be king someday, I say. By the way, I just saw Scroll Steve. The Dow was down 308. That was a minute ago. Is that about the number you've been looking at here?
Yeah, I had during the newscast, I think it was 338. But the NASDAQ is the bigger drop. The NASDAQ down more than 3% now, 224 points.
Smart people tell me to stop focusing on the Dow, but that's the number that everybody relates to. But the S&P is really a more... sort of,
it's a broader base. It's 500 stocks. It's down at 1.95% today.
So we'll continue to follow that. The market closes in this hour. We will see where we finish the day. Hopefully we get some of that back, but nothing definitive yet, right, Steve, about the who or the why of these suspicious packages?
No, nothing yet.
Yeah. Okay, and the list of names are the Clintons, Soros, John Brennan, Maxine Waters,
Eric Holder, right.
Care of Representative Wasserman. I think I said Smith earlier, Schultz's office, the Obamas, but the not
George
their,
Soros earlier this week.
Yeah, and not the Chicago home of the Obamas.
No. And they said they thought the Soros one earlier this week was actually dropped by hand into the mailbox, which seems to me like it would, I mean, help in the investigation. You know, you'd think there'd be security cameras around there or... security cameras along the road somewhere.
No kidding, yeah. I'm so curious, too, about the mechanics of these things. If they are in manila envelopes, then how does that work, right? How explosive are they? I presume it didn't have to be terribly explosive to do a lot of damage to some people, but exactly how do these things work?
Well, it seems like there were a lot sent and not a single one has gone off.
Yeah. And maybe that's not the most, you know, again, I guess it's foolish to try and get into the mind of somebody that does something like this, but maybe that's not critical to the mission. If somebody wants to send a message, the message has been sent. Okay, Steve's going to continue to follow that. He's in the WGN radio newsroom. Also this week, you heard that former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor said she'll no longer lead a public life because she wants to retire from public exposure as she has early onset Alzheimer's. Dr. Borna Bonektapur is in our studio. He is a cognitive neurologist with the Mesalem Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's Disease Center with Northwestern Medicine. He joins us in studio today to talk a little bit about this. Doctor, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
What was your first reaction when you heard about her announcement?
Well, it's always heartbreaking when you hear a new diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And then as someone who diagnosed it and have to share the diagnosis with a lot of people, it's always difficult. So my heart goes to the family and to the judge herself.
Yeah, I think we all feel that way. And I think we also appreciate the sort of, I don't know if courage is the right word, but the sort of explanation. Because when they do that, not only do they explain maybe their absence in the future, but I think they also help families who are wondering and struggling themselves. With their own issues, don't you?
Right.
And then the question I think for all of us becomes, okay, so what about me or what about my family? What are the early signs that I might have Alzheimer's or somebody I know might have Alzheimer's?
Right. So Alzheimer's, the most common presentation of Alzheimer's disease is short-term memory loss. And it's not the memory, the type of memory where you go to the kitchen and you don't remember why you were in the kitchen. That's mostly because of attention problems, right? But if somebody, you realize that they can't remember conversations or, you know, when disease is more advanced, they don't remember where they were the day before. Or they can't talk about things that happened the previous day. So then that's a red flag. This is 90% of the time, though. Not all Alzheimer's disease patients present with memory or short-term memory problems. They can present with word-finding difficulties, or they can present with difficulty with navigation. They may get lost when they're navigating, or they can't put on their clothes, for example, or they may lose their skills over time. We have some people who are even on the younger side, and they can't get their job done. They can't find emails. They can't do emails or check emails as fast as before. So there are different types of presentation, but memory and short-term memory is the most common.
You and I talked on the phone before the show today, and we're standing in each other's presence now. Would you be able to tell if I, based on your experience with me so far, have any reason to worry, have any symptoms? Because guess what? I have memory issues all the time, and I'm snapping my fingers all the time saying, Elif, what's that word? And when Brenda says, don't you remember we already saw that movie or we met those people at that restaurant? And I'm like, oh, God. You know what I mean? And I'm not alone. I think a lot of people who are in their 50s wonder and worry about these little stupid things that happen to us.
Right. I think part of it, I think you're doing great. Because you remembered all of our conversations, so you're doing fine.
From an hour ago.
With aging, and as we discussed, the major concern with Alzheimer's disease is age. As people age, there's the accumulation of two type of proteins, what we call them, the amyloid protein and the tau protein in the brain. And we all will have these proteins accumulated in our brain. And over time, the risk goes up. You know, by the time people are in their 90s, almost one out of two people will develop Alzheimer's disease. However, there are risk factors, and some of them are modifiable, and some of them are not modifiable. You know, if somebody has bad genes, that's strictly less than 1% of Alzheimer's cases are purely genetic. And
really?
Those are the ones, yeah.
So the 99% are what?
The 99%, they're partly genetic, and then mostly, you know, they are either groups of genes and risk factors. Some of them we know, and some of them we actually don't know.
Give me the things, though, that I can do or stop doing.
Very good question. So at the Alzheimer's Association meeting last year, there was a very nice session looking at what we know about Alzheimer's disease. There's a lot we don't know. What we can, based on what we know, there's a lot we can do. One of the early risk factors for Alzheimer's disease is actually education before 18 years old. People who are more educated and are more socially active and reading more, they do better later in life.
But you have to do that before you're 18.
Right. For middle ages, the major one is high blood pressure. And it's preventable. So that's a big one.
What if I have high blood pressure, but I'm controlling it with medication? Then I'm okay.
That decreases the risk. Obesity is another one. The other thing that was discussed, and then you don't hear about it much, is hearing loss, actually. People who are not hearing very well, they don't get that brain stimulation that others do. So they can present symptoms earlier.
I've heard that brain stimulation, it sounds logical, and that usually means it's not true. But it's true, isn't it? The brain stimulation helps ward off some of these symptoms?
Absolutely. So the accumulation of these pathologic proteins really accounts for maybe 50, 60% of the symptoms. The brain has the ability to get around these problems.
Is it, though, what qualifies as stimulation? My wife and I were talking about this earlier today. I can't remember her name. That's not even funny. I can. But she said that her understanding is that it's not just to do crossword puzzles or something like that, because that's not really a new learned experience, that you shouldn't just do something you're comfortable with. You should do something outside your sort of comfort zone. Is that the case?
That is the case. You know, crossword puzzles are good. You know, social activities are good. Going to concerts are good. Some people recommend learning new material, new language.
Right, I was just going to say.
So that is actually
learn Spanish
new
or French.
Instrument.
How about that?
Yeah.
No kidding. Really? So if I'm 70 and people say, what are you trying to play the guitar for or the piano? That you would recommend that as a sort of
course.
A preemptive sort of thing to do.
Yeah. There was an article at some point in the BBC Music magazine, the joy of playing bad. So there is no time that's really late because it does actually stimulate and challenge the brain.
You mentioned obesity. Are there any other dietary factors that lead to dementia or Alzheimer's?
Absolutely. So let me tell you what helps with prevention. So scientists noticed that people with Mediterranean type diet, they did better. So people who eat less red meat, eat more dairy, moderate amount of dairy, eat fish, they do actually better. So that's the type of diet, and then lots of vegetables. There was another study recently came out that people who consume more fibers and then more leafy vegetables, they do much, much better, both for Alzheimer's and for, stroke prevention.
General health.
Yes.
I haven't heard anybody say dark leafy vegetables are a bad idea.
That's right.
I just want somebody to say, as it turns out, hard salami is a winner. But I haven't found the physician or the right condition for which that's beneficial. Somebody texted in and said about, how about head trauma? Does that have any effect? Can I get conked and then suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's?
That's a good question. Depending on how the head trauma is, how many times it happens. And so, you know, you have the head traumas, for example. Some of athletes, if they have multiple head traumas, you've heard on news a lot.
CTE,
about the CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So that's a separate disease. It can cause dementia. And then dementia is a condition of the brain caused by a disease. It can be Alzheimer's. It can be traumatic brain injury.
Dementia is the umbrella under which?
It is the umbrella. It's something what we diagnose in the clinic. And then we look for the reasons. The other thing is, if somebody has one or two very impactful head traumas, they are at a higher risk of developing Alzheimer's also later.
Not necessarily CTE.
Not CTE.
So do you want your kids to play football?
If, you know, with football, what's important is to try to diagnose early head traumas and then get the players out of the field. So now American Academy of Neurology is really trying to get involved with early assessment.
Yeah.
So it's not playing football. It's to do it in the right fashion and evaluate people who have head trauma and then have some confusion or memory problem right around the impact.
Dr. Borna Bonektapur is in our studio. He's from Northwestern Medicine. He's over at the Alzheimer's Disease Center. You may have a question or a comment. Here's your chance, 312-981-7200. After Sandra Day O'Connor announced that she would retire from public life because she has early onset, we thought we'd ask some of these questions. And by the way, WGN Radio, Patty Vasquez and Andrea Darlis are doing a three-hour special with our friends from Northwestern Medicine about this very topic. I'll give you more details about that and try and answer some of your questions or calls next on WGN. Dr. Borna Bonektapur is in our studio. He's a cognitive neurologist at Northwestern Medicine. We're talking about the announcement by Sandra Day O'Connor that she'll retire from public life as a result of her early onset of Alzheimer's. And boy, once this story comes in the news, everybody looks at everybody, wives and husbands, parents at kids, kids at parents, and they go, okay, so where are we? Are there any, like, home... I mean, you talked about the early signs and stuff, but I wonder if, you know, if I were drunk and couldn't touch my nose, you'd say, hey, you're drunk.
Right.
I wonder if there was just any, try this, mom, dad, try this myself, and see if that will tip me, give me a clue. Anything like that?
You know, I think the easiest way is just general conversations and then see if the person can remember things that happened yesterday. What did they eat the night before? Very simple questions about what is the date? What's the month? So if a person can't really remember these things, that's a red flag.
Does it progress at the same rate for everybody?
Good question. No. So that's why every person is different, because people's genes are different, people's risk factors are different. People who are early onset disease, they tend to get worse a little faster, unfortunately. And people with an older age, maybe a little slower. But again, it depends on risk factors and then genes as well.
Oh, speaking of which, Jane had a question. Hey, Jane, you're on the air. What was your question? Hi.
Hi, doctor. I understand there's new research that the plaques in the brain are actually the brain protecting itself against diseases and infections. Can you speak about that research?
Are you asking whether infections are involved in the development of Alzheimer's disease?
My understanding is that the plaques are what causes Alzheimer's, are caused by infections.
Yeah.
You know, the role of infection as the trigger for Alzheimer's disease, it's really not known very well right now. What we know, that the process of Alzheimer's disease and the accumulation of plaques and then what we call the tangles, that starts an inflammation in the brain. So the brain kind of is in fire. So that we know for sure. Whether an infection can trigger Alzheimer's disease or not, it's been brought up, but we still don't know.
It's frustrating, isn't it? I mean, what we do know, but also what we don't
That's
know.
That's correct.
That's the conversation you and I have had both on and
That's
off
right.
the air about this subject today. I appreciate your phone call, Jane. Good luck to you and Tim and the rest of the calls. We don't have time for everybody today. We're doing a three-hour special on this very topic, coincidentally, and truly coincidentally. We didn't know Sandra Day O'Connor was going to announce this when we first set out to have this conversation. And that'll be tonight with Patty and Andrea, and that'll be at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock tonight, 3 hours of your questions and answers with our friends from Northwestern. That's this evening here on WGN. Doctor, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is John Williams. Tomorrow, Steve Cochran's got Coach Q in-house. They'll be talking about the Blackhawks, who aren't off to a great start, but they're off to a really good start. Remember last year, they started the season by scoring 10 goals, I think it was, against the defending Stanley Cup champs. And this year they had an unusual start in that, what was it, their first five games went into overtime? So we'll let Coach Q and Steve kick around the season as we are in the early throes of it. That'll be tomorrow morning, and that'll be at 8:40. I'm sure they'll be following the latest, too, on this news about the devices sent to the Clintons and the Obamas and CNN and Maxine Waters and Eric Holder and George Soros, etc. They'll probably be following these markets, too, how we close today and what it will look like tomorrow. Obviously, Steve, the panic selling is related to the devices being sent to these people in CNN?
I don't think it's that. I mean, I think there have been earning reports coming out. Boeing actually had a good report, and so the Dow started up today, but then more concerns over tech stocks. Now, what I'm referring to, and I'm just reading an article from MarketWatch, they refer to the ARMS index, which is a broader index, and looking at it, and its selling has reached above a level that is generally considered quote-unquote panic. So that's where that is coming from.
Oh, no kidding. That's a threshold, and when they reach that, it's described as such?
According to the way this index is set up and understood, yes.
Yeah, but I just thought that was a name we just threw around.
Right.
Like if you see it really going fast, you go, wow, panic selling. No, it's
so
actually
it's like
a thing.
Anti-M, that
yes,
kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Right, yeah.
I mean, like a recession is actually defined in terms, right? It has to be 10% over so many quarters or whatever it is. In this case, I did not know that there was a definition for panic selling. That's what you described
I think
it as.
I think it's a way to look at it. But either way, I mean, the fact that you've got almost a last look, it was a 3.4% drop, 3.5% drop in the NASDAQ today. That's a big drop. And, you know, these indices had all been already substantially down for the month, all three of them. I think the S&Ps have five straight
October sucks, man. When I get to be king, it's going to go January, February, March, September, November. There will be no October. October's a lovely month, but I'm telling you what.
Not on Wall Street.
Not on Wall Street. It never has been. It never has been. Hey, did you watch that Haunting of Hill House?
I keep getting closer and closer
to watching it, but you haven't.
No, I haven't watched it yet.
We've watched seven episodes.
Is it good?
It is. Everybody, you know what hooked me was the scroll or the story last week, and the headline was new Netflix series so scary some people are almost losing consciousness. And another one said some people are vomiting. And
that drew you to it.
And I'm like, I'm in. Because I don't like scary things, but in the sort of security of my own home, I can better tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I do is Brenda will like, you know, she's there on the sofa with Daisy and they are watching. I'm over in the kitchen looking around the corner.
Pretending not to watch.
I'm just doing the dishes. Brenda goes, you don't have to do the dishes now. I said, nope, this is a real good time for me to do the dishes. So I'm doing the dishes and staying physical. Got to have lights on in the kitchen. Brenda, when we watch the Haunting of Hill House, 10-episode series on Netflix, which is really creepy and sufficiently scary. She wants all the lights off, and then she puts on our Halloween candles, and she sits there and watches it with Daisy. I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, no, this is how to watch this. I go, no, it's...
So if we were to rank courage in your condo, it'd be Brenda?
It would be Daisy.
Daisy,
Brenda.
Oh, Daisy, Brenda, okay.
The spider plant, and then
John's
me
in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But it's good. I should watch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a couple of moments where you just go, huh, like that. But it's not a scare fest, right? It's not Halloween.
Will this be your Mincing Rascals recommendation tomorrow?
I think it will be. I think it will be. But here, listen, I'm not going to give anything away. I promise you I'm not. But my frustration is, I mean, this is the way all of these shows are, right? This is a couple that's moved into this house that they're going to fix up and sell. And they're going to make so much money that they'll be able to finally stop moving house to house. And they won't have to live in this haunted house anymore. But right now, they've just got to get this thing flipped, and then they'll be okay. So they're sort of committed to staying in this house. Well, the kids are like screaming all the time. Just every 10 minutes, the parents run into the bedroom, and they go, what was it? They go, you know, a scary thing, a ghost, a monster, a thing. And, you know, there was a ghost or monster in the thing. And the parents go, now, Timmy, you know that sometimes people have bad dreams. If your kids do that 42 nights in a row, and you're living in a house with lion head doorknobs, don't you think maybe you ought to look a little harder at what the kids are saying? You know, I'm getting mad at the parents. I'm like, you guys, I don't know if you're courageous or stupid, but something's going on here.
That's funny that you say that, because there's a commercial that bothers me too.
What's that, for that show?
No, but there's like a boogeyman in a closet, and the parents are like, oh, just go back to bed. I'm like, no, but there's actually a human in that kid's closet.
Yeah, right.
This is kind of like my dad and my sister's enjoyment of horror films and TV shows and me saying, I can't watch it. I get nightmares. I actually look in the corners of the room at night when you're not there and I'm alone. And they don't get it. It's like they're like the parents.
Even without, though, a scary movie, you're kind of a little edgy about being alone in a dark room or something like that?
No, but if I do watch something, it does psychologically affect me.
Well, and so there I am, and I'm thinking, okay, we just watched this really scary show, two episodes, because Netflix starts the next one in like 3, 2, 1. Next episode has started.
Don't fall asleep.
You're sucked in, and then you're watching that thing, and then you look up, and it's 11:30 at night, and it's dark, and you've got candles on, and the bedroom, there's no lights on in there. And I'm like, well, I'm not being the first to go in the bedroom. There's a couple of things that are really creepy about this show. One of them is you'll see a floating man from the back. And that doesn't sound all that scary. So there's a man.
No. That sounds really scary.
Does it really sound scary?
A floating man?
Well, he's just standing there, but his feet aren't touching the ground.
Yeah, I know what a floating man looks like.
That's what a guy does. And so he's standing there, and he's got a hat on, and it's terrifying. That is terrifying. Instead of a monster or a slasher with a knife and blood, there's none of that. It's just creepy, The Haunting of Hill House.
I think the creepy factor comes from the fear of the unknown that we all have.
Yeah.
That so many of us have.
Yeah.
We watched Insidious when my sister, my brother-in-law Kevin, and I were staying at my dad's in Turkey. And this was like 3 years ago. And afterwards, I had to sleep in the living room on the couch in the same room where they were sleeping on the pull-out bed.
Yeah.
So I was on a different couch, but I had to be in that room.
Well, one of the kids says, Mom, I can't sleep. There's a monster in the room. And she says, all right, well, you don't have to sleep in the room. You can, you know, you're scared. Okay, all right, we're going to let you this once. You don't have to sleep in your bedroom. You can sleep on the sofa in the living room. Well, it's a big old haunted house with a really bizarre-looking sofa. And I'm like, how is this an upgrade? The kids should sleep in the bed with the parents. Then when the monster comes to terrorize the kids, they'll go, hey, Mom, right there. See, now you don't have to run it down the hall. The other thing they do in these kind of shows, and this is just not how the world works, is they say, now, Billy, I know this is the 47th night in a row that you have screamed as loud as you can. And these are all good kids because there's a monster in here. But there's no such thing as monsters, son. Now you go to sleep and you turn out the light. And then, this is the thing, the parents always close the door, right? I mean, could we leave the hall light on and the door open, let the kids sleep in the light, let the kids sleep in your bedroom? But no, they don't do that. That's the way I would do it. I'd say, hey, listen, I turn to my wife and go, you know, there may be monsters in this house. Let's get everybody in one room. I like our chances that way.
Oh, my God. Someone just came up to my door. I got nervous.
mine.
Jeez.
And you know how when we're funny, aren't we, as human beings? Because you go, all right, I know there's no monsters in the closet. I'm an adult. I pay taxes. So we're cool. Right? But then the other part of your brain goes, there might be a monster under the bed. You never know. There's never been a monster under anybody's bed ever, but you're kind of open to that. And there's a couple of scenes where they're lying in the bed, you know, and they're having a nightmare or something, and they open up their eyes. Imagine you're lying on your back on the sofa in the bed, and you open up your eyes. So now what are you doing? You're looking at the ceiling. Well, that's where the monster is, and the monster's looking down at you.
Ew.
So now I'm thinking, okay, my bedroom is now no refuge. I can't say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to the bedroom. I'm going to lie in the bed. But then I look up at the ceiling.
Yeah, there's no safe haven.
I can't. So that's kind of scary. I can't look up at the ceiling, so I've got to look, you know. So it's kind of eliminating your safe spaces visually. The Haunting of Hill House. So it's 10 episodes, and I'm on number 7. I don't know how it ends. I'm going to guess it doesn't end well for everybody, but we'll see how it goes. It's 247 on WGN. That's my frustration with that show. I don't know if you've been watching it or not. On a scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes, I'm going to give it 20 and a half. That's how we rate things at my house. On a scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes, I'm giving it 21.5. I'll have a full report for you after the 10th episode. Should we take Joe first? Hey, Joe, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Joe, you're on the air.
Hi. The way I got rid of the monster factor with my kids was my son wanted me to take him up to the bedroom, which was at the top of the stairs, and I said, "No, Daddy's really tired. You go up by yourself. You're a big boy. You can do it." And when he got to the top of the steps and he started to go in the door, I went, "Okay, monsters, get him now."
Oh, no.
And he screamed. Yeah, I did. And then he screamed and jumped into bed. And then I walked up and I said, "See, they didn't get you. There are no monsters."
If there had been monsters.
And from that point on,
yeah, right, right.
I gave him permission to get him. And from that point on, he was never afraid of monsters.
But hold I on, bet he didn't trust you.
I'm just living with this for a second. I just want everybody to hear that and decide now if that's a good way to alleviate your kids' fear, you know, and their fear.
Well, I just walked up right after I said it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not horrible.
I didn't...
It's not like
you
scared him, like,
yeah. Right, and he's in rehab even as we speak. No, even worse, he was transported to another dimension. He went into the closet and they got him.
I told you a story a couple of years ago, and you said, "Aren't you worried about when he's standing in line for lunch at Statesville?" you don't remember it. But I pulled him out of school to play golf with him one day.
Best.
He was an A student. He was fine. It was a beautiful day. It was a Kodachrome day, if you know what that is.
I do. That's the best best dad ever on
and
the phone.
He's almost a scratch golfer now.
So instead of being captured by the monsters, he's a good golfer and you're a good guy. Thanks for listening. I appreciate the phone call, Joe.
Okay.
Have a good day. Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe that's the way to do it. This texter says, "John, my husband gave our son a spray bottle of water to ward off the monsters." And 630, another number, says, "No one can get you if you hide under the covers. That's a monster law." Hey, Art, you're on WGN. I'm John. What's up?
I just wanted to give you a heads up. When my kids were 1.5 and 3.5, they started with the "I'm scared of monster" stuff.
Yeah.
And I told them, we built the house with special doors and windows that monsters couldn't penetrate.
Nice.
Never had another monster in the house.
So they weren't scamming you. They were really worried, but that worked, huh?
Yeah, it worked perfectly, and we're using it now on the grandchildren.
Oh, boy, Art. Thanks for the phone call. Hey, you notice what we haven't talked about a lot today? Lottery, because somebody won that $1.6 billion. I wonder if you're like a lot of us who went through a sort of "I don't play the lottery" to "I do play the lottery" progression. You know, and it starts with the announcer saying something like, "The jackpot is now at $40 million.
I don't play the lottery. What's it at?"
"The Mega Millions jackpot is now at $100 million.
I have a friend who bought some tickets. I bought a Starbucks coffee instead. Guess who came out ahead?"
"The jackpot is now $300 million.
Everyone is talking about what they would do if they win. My friend would buy a villa in Italy, and she doesn't even speak Italian. They lost. I bought a Starbucks. Came out ahead again.
Jackpot now $500 million.
Okay, I'm in this office pool now with everyone else, and if I win, I'm getting a cat tree. Well, first I'll get a cat and a bigger apartment and a cat tree, and my cat and I will chill.
The Mega Millions jackpot is now $738 million.
We didn't win, but no one else did. I don't think we picked good numbers, but this time, I really like our chances. Everyone put in $2, then I went out and bought 75 more tickets, which is a lot, but I want to get a bunch of cats and cat trees, like a cat tree forest, and chill with my cats, I'll learn to speak Italian, too, for my Italian masseuse, and his name will be Tony.
Jackpot, $953 million.
So this is kind of annoying, but also exciting, because no one else won, and I think I've got some good feelings about winning this time. Started my own pool and collected $48, then threw in another $458 on my own. That's my car payment, but I think I've got it this time. Also, Tony will take care of the cats when I'm traveling.
Jackpot now $1.1 billion.
Okay, of the 253 Mega Million tickets I bought last time, only 5 of them had any of the winning numbers, and only 1 ticket had 2 winning numbers. So that's really weird, right? Must mean I'm due for a winner. I got out of the pool and bought $458 of tickets, then another $458 of tickets for my sister. Okay, I don't have a sister, but the cat forest that Tony's maintaining will be in Montana, and I'm going to buy a lime green Tesla, which they don't even make yet.
Mega Millions jackpot rolls over to $1.6 billion.
Mr. Car Payment and my rent told the bank and the landlord if they could just hang on till Friday, I'll get them back with interest. They hit me with the damn right. Went again with a lucky $458 in tickets. When I win... I'm going to give $5,000 to charity. We'll probably bring Tony's cousin Marco on board, too. Think I'll buy some pinball machines, too.
A winning ticket is sold in South Carolina.
Which is not where I live. Literally, I do a quick, hey, was I in South Carolina this week? And remembering that I wasn't, got pretty ticked at how the lottery just takes your money. Called my attorney to inquire about suing the lottery. Seriously? South Carolina? And who's going to take care of all these cats? Also, I don't have an attorney. Wave goodbye to Tony and Marco. Ciao.